Hey friends, welcome to a very special Ask Robin Black here at Tatuado, which is Vince Neil's restaurant here at Circus Circus in Las Vegas. And this is Vince's private room that they let me have. Because it's been a bit of a dream week this week at UFC 209, so we should probably do it here. Kind of a boyhood dream to hang out in Vince's room. I'm a dork. Come on in. Pretty cool. So we will just hang out and chat here. I will answer some of your questions. That's what we do here on Ask Robin Black. When I think about what we've been doing, this kind of setting, this sort of podcast vibe, has been about trying to find some of the philosophical and developmental and conceptual ideas behind the study of fighting that we've been doing. You know, when I'm sitting at the desk or doing my day job kind of thing, there's a lot more thinking and a lot more behind the scenes stuff that goes into that. And that's why I wanted to do this podcast, so that we could kind of work it out together. I could use some of your questions and ideas to do that. And so I have some questions. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about my week. I warn you, I have a big shot of tequila here. So once I have that, that will signal 30 minutes before the end of the show today. But it has been a really wild week. And I kind of knew it would be. We booked this restaurant to do our out in. I didn't know I'd get Vince's booth. And there are, maybe I'll get Wade to do a scan after and put it over. But there's chandeliers and like gold wallpaper and stuff up in here. And empty glasses everywhere. And it has this leftover 80s rock vibe. And when I started out in fighting, that's where I came from. I was singing in a rock band. And as fun as that was, I was dreaming of working for the UFC. And this weekend I came down, and Fight Network, of course, is my family, and I'm going to work for them for as long as they'll have me. And in fact, my wife reminded me before this trip of 8 years ago when I was working at Extreme Couture and how badly I wanted to work at Fight Network. So that started my week off really well. And then we came down here, and I booked this restaurant. I didn't know I'd have this, as I just said, but I booked this restaurant thinking that we could recap the week, knowing that it would be kind of an interesting and meaningful week. And so we started right away covering stuff for Fight Network, for our UFC 209. And we worked our way into Thursday night, which was the World MMA Awards. And I was nominated for Analyst of the Year, which was so crazy, with Brian Stann, Chael Sonnen, Dan Hardy, and Dominic Cruz, who ended up winning. And congrats to Dom. He deserves it. But to be grouped in with that group of people was really shocking and oddly stressful. It makes you kind of realize that where you're working at your very best has to now be your new minimum. That has to be your minimum expectation. That's a lot of pressure. But I was also very thrilled and very honored. And then they asked me to present an award, and I had this amazing jacket, and I had my friends over in this suite at Venetian looking out over the strip, and it really was beautiful. So I ended up presenting an award to Dana White. And then Friday we were at the weigh-ins, and I went and introduced myself to Jorge Masvidal, who I'm an enormous fan of. Spent time at the party with Dean Thomas and Mike Brown, who are some of the best minds, Duke Rufus, some of the best minds in the business. Learned a lot of stuff. And then Saturday night, I did a gig for the UFC. The big UFC on the rug, hosted by Robin Black, UFC stuff everywhere. It was really, really nice to do. And we saw brilliant fights, and I talked about them with some brilliant fighters. And it's been really cool. It's been like, it's a real cool adventure to, you know, when I was wearing shirts like this in rooms like this playing in a rock band, I dreamed of doing what I'm doing now. And so I'm very pleased and very happy. And I always see what these fighters are doing to change and develop. And I use that to see if that can somehow work for me. And then I guess I'm passing some of those ideas on to other people. I know I'm digressing. This is my third beer. We're kind of enjoying the week and celebrating a good week. So thank you for hanging out with me. We'll do some questions and we'll hang out in here and I'll see what we got. Chase is not here. We got Wei behind the camera today. Thanks, Wei. Chase organized and sent some of the questions. Okay. So Chase did a great job of sending these because as I glanced at the first couple, they're very relevant to this weekend. The first one from Azina A is thoughts on the best way to combat extreme weight cutting in MMA? Maybe answer it on your next Ask Robin Black. Well, see, here we are. And it's the first question. It's a logical first question. Excuse me. One thing I have to say, way too many people smoke in Las Vegas. Like, Wei was hacking up a lung this morning. My eyes were burning. It's, yeah, it's crazy. So weight cutting. Now, I want to talk about weight cutting, but I want to do what we've done a lot here on this show, which is see what larger themes we can pull from it. But so this question comes up, obviously, because the best fight of the weekend, the one we were most excited about, I spent a long time breaking it down, and it was a pleasure, and many other people have spent a lot of time on this fight. Fans from all around the world probably flew here for this fight, something Ramdeen pointed out to me in five rounds today that I realize now. And a lot of people were very disappointed. And what happened? Well, Habib, a genius artist and athlete and combat sportsman that he is, failed in his weight cutting to the point that he was medically unfit to fight. Now, to address first the weight cutting thing, the reaction that many have, including people I respect highly, is this weight cutting has got to be stopped. And this is not weight cutting's fault. Weight cutting is not a living being. It's not even a thing. Weight cutting is the... So first, let's quickly do two things. Weight loss or weight management and weight cutting. So those things get blended very easily in the way we talk about it. Weight cutting is the act of, through mostly dehydration, but there's other tools, losing a lot of weight in a dangerous and unfair way very rapidly so that you can briefly weigh a certain weight, weigh in, and then replenish all of that and be an enormous, much bigger athlete. Weight management or weight loss is something you do over 8, 10, 12 weeks to reduce your weight down to a very manageable level. In a perfect world, you wouldn't cut anyway. You would manage your weight down to the weight of competition, weigh in, and then maybe gain a few pounds. I worked with John Dodson on that UFC sidekick that I mentioned earlier with him last night. And even when he was fighting at 125, he would get down to within 5 pounds the week of. 5 pounds is nothing. You know, you skip breakfast, you go for a jog on the treadmill, wearing a suit, you're done. A lot of these other guys do 2-day-long and 3-day-long processes of dehydration. So if you manage your weight properly, you don't have to cut much weight. When you have to cut too much weight, you either failed to manage your weight properly or you intentionally stayed huge to cut weight to gain an advantage, knowing that through your personal sacrifice, it would reward you with an advantage. You're going to harm yourself, push yourself to the limit, but in doing so, you would be rewarded. And that's fair. I don't judge that. So it is not weight cutting's fault. It is the fault of the athlete and the people around them. So winners blame themselves for that, and Habib is a winner, and he will blame himself, and he'll adjust that. Sucks for Tony, especially, and everybody else. But so that is the truth. I mean, not adding anything or taking anything away or shaping something or bias towards something. If you cut too much weight, it's because you didn't manage your weight. Other people may say, well, he's 190 pounds. He doesn't have to be 190 pounds. I don't have to be this weight. Regular folks do, but if I'm a professional athlete, I control my weight through diet and exercise and other factors. So when you think about it, the issue here is seeing the future, like not leaving something till the end, not leaving whatever it is you want to accomplish down to the last possible minute and then stretching yourself to the limit to just do it. You do this as far in advance as possible, whatever the project you're working on, whatever the goal you're trying to accomplish. If you wait another day, if you eat another dessert, you're making it harder in the future. And sometimes there's this idea, and I think I mentioned it before, and I make this joke with friends all the time, when they're like saying, oh, I don't know if I want to go home and do X, Y, and Z. I say, should I always ask yourself what future you would think of this? So if I do the dishes today, I might not enjoy that, but future Robin will be very appreciative that the dishes are done. You know, if I go to the gym, I might not feel like going to the gym, but future Robin will be much happier that I went to the gym. And if you think about that, it's a little easier to do. And future Habib would have been a lot happier if he didn't eat that dessert on TV. And not only because it was on TV, but every one of those desserts is work you're going to have to do later. So weight cutting is not something that will ever be managed. It'll never be outlawed. It can never be tricked into something. You can never make some other structure because people will try to take advantage of that one too. Blame the athlete, always blame the athlete. And if you're an athlete, blame yourself. Don't blame your coach, don't blame your nutritionist. You hired them. You chose to listen to them or chose to secretly not listen to them. It is always the athlete's fault. And that's it. Feel free to disagree with that and argue it, but I'm telling you from a point of study and people will purposefully take advantage of rules and structures. If you really are a 195-pound man, you have no business fighting at 155. But if you are a 155-pound athlete, you should not get that big. It's all up to the athlete. You choose the weight class you're going to compete in, and you choose the date you're going to compete, and you choose everything you're going to eat and every action you're going to take between now and them. And it's always up to you. Having said that, I'm an enormous Habib fan, and I'm sure he'll take responsibility. This will be a part of his process of becoming one of the greatest fighters ever, is how he bounces back from this setback. And it's a big one. Imagine not missing weight isn't like, well, I lost some money or, you know, I didn't get to fight. Everything of the reality of this branch of where your future is going is gone. You make weight. So let's go back. This destination is something huge, I'm going to say. And we'll go back a number of steps, making weight. Going back a number of steps, the dessert you ate here, the workout you skipped, the planning you did, it all goes back. And what's the ultimate goal? You're in a stadium with 70,000 Russians fighting Conor McGregor for $5 million or $8 million for the undisputed lightweight championship of the world. That all left with the desserts you chose to eat. Do you know what I'm saying? That all ended. That stream of reality stopped when you decided to skip that run. Or, no, I won't cut that much. I won't manage that much weight. I'll cut that much later. All of those decisions led to either stadium in Russia, Conor McGregor, $8 million, 60,000 people, or not. And your life, everyone's life is like that. The choices you make today lead to that. I've had a really great week, and I'm not bragging. I'm sharing. But we're sitting here in Vince Neil's thing. I was giving an award to Dana White, and I'm doing a cool show and stuff, and I'm really happy about that. But if I do stupid things from today forward, it'll never happen again. Anywhere that might be out in front of me all requires me to make smart choices and do quality things and learn things and work hard and stuff, you know, it's all connected, and you have control over all of it. And you increase your control over all of it by getting better at assessing yourself and managing your impulses. And it's all so obviously in front of me with Habib on the scale. It's a microcosm of the choices you made 10 weeks ago compared to what's possible in 2 years. But it's his life. The value of what he may have learned from this experience could lead to him being the greatest of all time. So it's never failed. Maybe the fork wasn't the stadium here. The fork was through the failed weight cut, understanding what you did wrong, which changes the way you think, which makes you a better fighter, which then leads to this thing. And, you know, it's never over. It's never over. It's just another step. Let's take another one. This is cool. Good job, Chase. At Dylan Max S. Robin Black, we know you didn't hate that main event. Smiley face. Is this outcome inevitable with Styles, particularly Wonder Boys? Okay. So a couple things. One is I would ask you to go watch 5 rounds. Me and Ramdeen talked a lot about this today. But I will recap what I was thinking today, and with part of the fun is working these kinds of things out. But what you watched was a beautiful contest, because what you watch every time elite athletes who have dedicated their life to something meet is a beautiful contest. Every time, every single one. The hesitancy, the fear, the nervousness, the failures, the setbacks, the psychic battle, the pressure, all of those things are flavors and textures of fighting. Every one of them. They're part of the varied tapestry of textures of how this art works. And none of them are inherently better or worse than others. And this was what Ramdeen and I talked about today, is you can tell me that you enjoy something more than others, or your experience thus far has allowed you or encouraged you to enjoy something more than others. But inherently, they're all beautiful. And the comparison we made today was, at one time, somebody would be like, dry wine is the best wine. Sweet wine is for the poor people and the losers and the, you know, the Robin Blacks and the Tings, and not the royalty. They drink this garbage, but the real consumers drink this. And it's like, over time, we realized that sweet and dry, or, you know, any of these textures and flavors and colors, they were all beautiful. They were all different. And you may like one more than the other. And if you don't like this kind of fight, I will support your right to not like it. But you cannot tell me it's not beautiful, because I know what beauty is when fighters fight. And it's almost every time you take a great. And everything, the pressure and the reality and what they see and what they are experiencing and what their body chemistry is doing, all of that tells a beautiful story every time. A unique, once-in-a-lifetime experience when you match up two greats. And this is just another one of those. So. And the inevitability, it's one of the things I try not to say stylistic matchups or styles make fights, because things that were relevant things to say about something 5 years ago are irrelevant now. But this is one of those ones where you need to find a way to express that, because the nature of who these guys are and their collection of skills and attributes and ideas and their psychological makeup and all of that stuff created what you got. And what you got was beautiful. And if you don't appreciate that beauty, that's okay. Because some people love country music and some people love punk rock. And inherently, one is not better than the other. They are what they are, and your love for them is your love for them. But you cannot say, oh, jazz is not real music. Musicians said that forever. Now people realize jazz is brilliant. And this kind of fight was that. This kind of fight is its own unique thing. And you could hate on it, but that is a failure of the people who share fighting with you. It's not your failure. It's a failure of the people who have shared what fighting is about. Some of that is the UFC. Some of that is people like me and Ramdeen and John and our friends. And some of that is marketing. And some of that is a function of how busy you are. You know, only the loudest things attract your attention. And when people punch each other in the face until they're bleeding everywhere, that's very loud. This is subtle. This is quiet. This is a feather, you know? It's not a hammer. And a feather doesn't suck compared to a hammer. It's just different. So you're right. I don't hate that fight. I love that fight. And I'll make it a big part of my mission to get that across. You know, it was a lackluster affair, not many finishes. That's not true of this one, but I've seen that a dozen times, different writers. Finishes aren't better than decisions. They're not. They're just different, you know? Doesn't mean you can't say, I only like decisions. You can say that, you know? You can say decisions are something I don't enjoy. I like the urgency of a quick finish. That's great. That's your prerogative. But don't say that somebody who loves the chess match of finish is stupid, or that fight is bad. The fight isn't bad. It's just not your flavor. You like dry wine. They like sweet wine. You like red wine. They like white wine. You know, they're all beautiful. Thank you for your question, though. Okay, it's almost time for my tequila, and I'm only on question number two, and I have seven more. I'll wait. Brother Nero from @ShootBoxKick. I have a feeling this one will be good. Oh, it is good. And it is relevant to at Shootbox Kick. I heard before that knockout power is something you either have or you don't, and it can't really be trained. Is that true? Part of me feels like Chase might have screwed this one up and that I've been asked that before, and he repeated it. Now, I could be wrong. In the course of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all day, every day, between work, watching, making notes, having different conversations, 20, 30 with Ramdean, one with UFC.com, 3 hours with that UFC sidekick, different interviews and stuff, our own podcasts, I might just feel like I've answered this. But this is a myth. Knockout power is something that you either have or you don't, and it can't really be trained. Is that true? That is not true. There's almost no truth to that. I know that you've heard it 100 times, and that when we hear something a lot, sometimes we just feel that it's true and then find examples to make it true and then go with that. But it is not true. You develop power through expression and skill all the time. And I am now 100% sure that I've answered this on last week's Ask Robin Black. So I'd ask you to go back and check that out so that I can explain it more in depth of how you generate power and how you improve the ability to generate power. So please go back. And if you really are enjoying these, I appreciate you a lot because I enjoy doing them. We move on. Michael O'Brien. Who's your pick as the more fluid and free in their game? At Gamebred Fighter, which is Jorge Masvidal, or the Notorious MMA, which is Conor McGregor? All right. I will have half of my tequila to that. Thank you for the great question. It's in an enormous glass, so if you have a 3-ounce tequila shot, an ounce and a half twice is probably better for you. Patron. Okay. Who is more fluid and freewheeling? Now, there's a big tendency, and this is a logical thing to do. Our audience, I mean our audience here at Fight Network, but I also mean the fight audience. If you were to look back, and I've been paying attention, 3 years ago, 5 years ago for sure, there was little or no talk out there in the sphere about how people fought, the techniques, the game of fighting, the art of fighting. There was talk about all the mechanisms around it. And now there's a lot. And when that happens, you have only a certain amount of research and study that you can be doing. And so there are steps of which you see the study of fighting go through. And one of them is a categorization. This guy's got he's a volume puncher. This guy's an outside fighter. I went through it, and I probably pushed that out into the world, and some people were like, I may have forced that issue. I could be at fault in this. There's no blame. And when I see people do it, I don't judge them. I did once. I was much more judgmental than I am now, and that's something I hope to get better at in the future. This guy's a boxer. We started with, he's a boxer, he's a wrestler, he's a striker, he's a grappler. Now we'll be like, he's a distance manager, and he's a outside fighter, and he's an inside fighter, and he's a, et cetera, et cetera. And one of those things now, fluidity is something we've talked about a lot in the last couple of years. It's been unavoidable that the fluid aspect, the liquid aspect of fighting has become big. And I'm curious to see how George St. Pierre has worked within that realm. And undoubtedly, I think it's obvious, I have my favorite fighters. I'm a connoisseur and an enormous fan of fighting. And Conor McGregor and Jorge Masvidal are among them. Cub Swanson, Carlos Condit, Dominic Cruz, Demetrius Johnson, Holly Holm. I have my favorite fighters that I love to study. I love to study them all. Darren Elkins, I don't know what the time, I'm going away this week. I'll tell you about it a little later. But my wife works on the road right now in musical theater, so going away next week. So I may not get to do a breakdown of the Darren Elkins Bektik fight. But there's an incredible beauty in how a guy like Darren Elkins fought that fight. So they're not all, although the ones I named are all very liquid and fluid. And that's something I appreciate because of the art of it. It's not only that way. Jorge Masvidal, for me, is this strange combination of fluidity and the visceral fighting nature, you know? I'm not trying to be a hipster. Like, I don't want to be the guy to say I was the first big Jorge Masvidal fan. That was not my intention. But that's what I spotted. That's what I saw. And that's why I started to celebrate him for a couple of years. You know, I feel like my Cub Swanson has been, he's still going to be one of my very favorites. But we got him somewhere. And I say we as in my 2% role and the fans' 98% role. And then his 1,000,000% role in performance. Well, I'm trying to tell people you got to watch Jorge Masvidal. And now Jorge Masvidal goes out and takes it 1,000,000% in his own hands and has the greatest performance of his life right at the time where we're all paying attention. And it couldn't be happier for him. But it isn't just that fluidity. It is that visceral, you know, primal nature mixed with the fluidity. That's rare. I can't think of anybody else who has it in that context. Connor is very fluid. But Connor is... he's a self-actualizer. And that's why I relate to Conor McGregor. Because you have large goals in mind. He wanted to be a two-division champion in fighting. I want to commentate the UFC. You want what you want. You have these large goals in mind. And then you make small process goals that you want to achieve to get there. And so I like that about McGregor. And I'll always study him for that reason. And when I've sort of studied him up close and his line of thinking, I'll always admire that. And if he was hanging out here, he would make us laugh and we would have a great time. But there's something, and he is a studier, a consumer of all things fighting to become greater at what he does. And so, whereas Jorge, I think, is a thousands of repetitions, obsessive, based on those, his nature. And so I can't really compare them. Again, I can't compare them any more than I can compare Bektik versus Darren Elkins or Tyron Woodley versus Stephen Thompson. They're all brilliant. Those fights are both brilliant. They're different flavors. They're different textures. They're different elements. And Conor McGregor and Jorge Masvidal have fluidity in common, but so many other attributes and aspects and ingredients that are not in common. Right this minute, the fighter that I am most interested in watching perform is Jorge Masvidal. But McGregor has time off. He could suddenly come back and I'd be compelled to study him too. I went over and introduced myself to Jorge Masvidal. I didn't want to be an annoyance, you know? That's not my speed. I wanted to thank this man for his brilliant work and tell him it was an honor to study him. And he goes, you fought like 9 times or something, right? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, I told that Mike Brown, no. Yeah, this guy, I know there's something. He knows too much. And just that little exchange, that's enough for me, you know. That's enough for me. I'll see that guy again when he even continues further. And at some point, I'll see him in the gym, and at some point, I will analyze him out in the world. But that little exchange for me was plenty. I'm not here to become these guys' best friends. I'm here to study their work. But that was really cool. That's really cool. Yo, man, you know too much. You know, that was cool. I mean, what am I going to tell you? That I didn't find that entertaining? That I didn't enjoy that? I enjoyed that. I admire this man's work. And it was cool to see that he had an appreciation for mine. So I'm done marking out. And we will move on. It was cool, though. What aspect of boxing could most effectively be applied to MMA that most fighters aren't using right now? From R. Rose 97. Ryan. What aspect of boxing could most effectively be applied to MMA that most fighters aren't using right now? Well, that's very interesting because right away I start to think about... My first thought is, Well, there's so many because boxing, I went in, I was doing some training with Coach Angela Reyes yesterday morning. And I love training with Coach Angela. There's a lot of brilliant coaches, and they all have different perspectives. And Coach Angelo has, Coach Reyes, has a really cool kind of playbook. He is tied together from a number of ingredients, including his background in karate and boxing. And mostly, a lot of these coaches and a lot of these systems are trying to figure out the work through all the phases. And in his, it's a quarterbacking kind of system where you call plays based on what you see the defense doing or based on what you have caused the defense to do because they read your plays. And I love that. And there are many other systems, and none are better than the other. What it comes down to is great athletes and great coaching and great relationships. But I do love Coach Angelo's, and I'll be glad to work with him more, and he's a good friend. But that's not what I was going to say. What I was going to say was I watched his fighter, Anna Houlatan, who is a elite kickboxer and mixed martial arts fighter and boxer, spar with a young guy after he trained me. I'm unfortunately, it could be the tequila. I forget the young boxer's name. But hopefully, if Coach sees this, he'll put it in the comments. But it was so cool to watch them just go in and throw hands. And Anna, I believe, has a kickboxing or mixed martial arts fight coming up. I'm not sure which. And she's training at that level. And he works with Alex Ricci and has some training with fighters at Mayweather's gym. And so I could pick out choices of the boxing techniques, you know. And there were different layers and levels of them that I was seeing being played with in there, and you start to think about how and where we could add any one to MMA. But I don't think it's the one or the two techniques so much as the training techniques. So could we use an uppercut different? Could we angle an uppercut different? Can we fight inside differently using some of the concepts of inside fighting from boxing? Sure, we can do any of those things. But I think it's some of the training that is probably what we could add that's the best. And I think one of the biggest ones is the stress of fighting is high. It's less for Alistair Overeem because he's had 80 fights. I worked with Yves Edwards the other night on this project, and Yves has 45 plus wins recorded and another 15 that are not recorded. He has, you know, 70, 80 fights, including what's recorded, and Sure Dog, 66, 67, and the fights that are not recorded. And when Yves would fight, if he were to get in a fight right now, it is not the same level of stress on his body. And we can bring that down through the way that boxers spar. They get into the chaos. They don't have to hurt each other. They don't have to try to... In fact, you can't have your training partners try to finish you, or when you're hurt, finish you. You need to develop that sensitivity that I've hurt my opponent, and I need to make them work through that. Not back off fully. Know how to pressure them enough that they respond to the pressure, but work through it. And I think it's that style of training that happens in boxing that, oh, I'm hurt. If you're in mixed martial arts often, you get kicked in the head, and it's like, are you okay? You okay, man? You're right? Okay, guys, I think Steve's hurt. Okay, just stop. And not all teams will do that. In fact, the higher level teams, getting hurt is common. But in boxing, the partner has the sensitivity to the fact that you're dinged, and they'll pressure you properly to get you through it without finishing you. And that element of technical and mid-level sparring, I think, is of real value for fighting. And I think it's things like that. I think we're past the point where when you watch a Stephen Thompson versus a Tyron Woodley, I think we're past the point where saying, you know, guys, it's really time for a spinning back elbow, or, you know, talking about individual techniques. Some of them will pop up again, and you see the odd variation where people bring a different angle on something, or they turn something, or they play with... But we understand most of what's happening now. It becomes in the how and the why. It's in the back of the machine now. It's under the hood now. You know, it's not the wheels, it's not the rims, it's not the paint job of the fighter. It's underneath the hood. You know, so I think that's what we need to find what boxing has been doing well for many years and bring it out. So a couple more. Thanks for hanging in here with me. It's a real pleasure. It's really, you know, to wrap up the week, being able to document some thoughts like this and share with some friends how much fun it's that I've had. You know, it, Wei and Bobby and John and my friend Karim and his fiance and a few other friends, we all got together for that awards show and had this beautiful jacket on that was, it made me feel so good. And I was around all these cool people who said such nice things to me. And we're going to go back to work next week, and we're going to go back, well, not next week, I'm going on vacation. But we're going to go back to work after that, and it'll be 60-hour weeks at the cubicle, digging in, studying things, working hard, you know, doing the hard work, and I'm happy. That's what makes me happy. And it could be 10 months, it could be 2 years, it could be 3 years, it could be never next time that we get this kind of little momentary rewards or little chances to stop and look back. You know, Mullins, who I do the mentality podcast with, so I was like, you know, you need a second to pat yourself on the back, but then you have to move on. So my instinct would be, well, why don't we just skip the second to pat yourself on the back? Let's do the next thing. Let's go further. Let's go deeper. Let's carve through more layers. And but he says it's important, and I feel like I'm doing that with you guys here. And that's really cool. In what ways can teaching martial arts, like Wonder Boy does, help a fighter refining their skills? Ooh, that's good. That's a great question. Of course. It's from Akasombo, who, at the Akasombo, AKOSOMBO. Follow him. Or her. I don't know who that is. Cheers to you, Akasombo. Because Akasombo comes up with some fantastic questions. They're very philosophical. And on some level, and you can't rush these things, but you're going to study the nuts and bolts, and you're going to study the X's and O's, and you're going to study the ABCs. Then you're going to study the do-re-mis. And the do-re-mis are where things start to get a little fluid and spiritual and artistic. Then you're going to study yourself. You know, it's fighting. The study of fighting is the study of these fighters. And then you're studying what these fighters do. And when you do, you see that they're studying themselves. And that's one of the differences between them and many of us. And it's one that we can spot and one we can work on. But this ties into that abstract thinking that I'm doing there, where teaching can really help that. And it's a weird thought, because if teaching helps, you want to teach, but you don't want to teach until you have enough to teach, until you've learned something. You go into teacher mode right away, and you get out of student mode, and you've stunted your own growth. You'll get some value because teaching gives you value, but being a student gives you the most value. And a Wonder Boy teaching kids, going through these mechanics, you know, and people use 10,000 hours, and it's been misused, but we can use it as an analogy, that to repeat something 10,000 hours makes you perfect at it, if you do it properly with real feedback and real commitment to it. And after 10,000 hours, what's the next? 100? 100,000? Well, you're not necessarily going to be able to do that, but you can do it through teaching. So I think teaching's dramatically important. Constant reinforcement. You don't study your own little building blocks and fundamentals. But if you're studying someone else, it repeats to you their importance. But I think the big thing is you don't want to teach until you have something to teach. Being a student, and I think I still act like I'm a student as best I can. I'm just a student who along the way is sharing. I'm not necessarily trying to educate, I'm trying to documenting this path. So if I'm going down and I'm learning a bunch of stuff and I document this path, somebody else, I'm leaving breadcrumbs. I'm not teaching you something, I'm just leaving some breadcrumbs. And so I think that's where I'm finding is a pretty valuable thing for me. It's also breadcrumbs. You can go back. I don't go back and watch these, but if I did, and I will, I guess now that I've thought about it and said that out loud, I will one day. I'm going to be very curious to see where I was thinking at the time. And hopefully, if I've digressed and I'm not having such valuable thoughts, this will remind me that I'm capable of those valuable thoughts. Or if I can be lucky enough to go further, I'll look back and go, I could have never got to this line of thinking without going through this line of thinking. So I think they might be breadcrumbs for me too. It's very interesting. I really appreciate your question, man. I think I'm going to wrap it up. I'm feeling great and I'm really enjoying this. But I know there's still a couple more to do and I want to do a good job. And this double-sized tequila shot, I don't want it to interfere with my last couple jobs. So I want to find... Nah, actually, I like all three of these questions. So, okay. Twitch Blakey, what is one of your favorite techniques? We're going to come back to that one. And I've said this before, but in some of the cases, we have come back to them. But I think the favorite technique is the one you're doing right now. It's the one you're studying right now. Because your favorite technique can be the one you're good at. That should not be your favorite technique. Your favorite technique should be the one you're focused on right now. Whatever that is, in fighting, in martial arts. I've been the guy with the great sidekick or the guy with the great triangle. And then my favorite technique was my triangle. And it got a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And it was harmful to all the other stuff. It was a barrier to everything else. So I think your favorite technique should be the one you're working on right now. If you're working on, you know, this technique, but you wish you were working on this one, you're doing this one a disservice. So I think your favorite one has to be the one right in front of you. But I'm going to give that some more thought. Tyler Sheets, with all the talk of the rise of the, quote, new age fighter, where does at Mighty Mouse UFC fall into that? Is he that? Good question, Tyler. And the answer is yes, he is that. In fact, he's on the front end of that. He is literally as close to the perfect fighter that there is. Whether we will get a chance to see that right now is in part because there's nobody close to him. So, he also, through his perfection, is somewhat unremarkable outside of perfection. You know? He's the best fighter in the world. And he's probably way better than we think he is based on what we've been able to see. I've talked about this before. I saw Demetrius yesterday, and it was really great to see him. I was training in the gym, and he was coming in to do some work, and he was in town. And then he was excited to see Tyron, and I know there's a lot of great athletes and great fighters that realize how good Tyron Woodley is. But Demetrius Johnson is the best fighter that the world has ever seen. And his coach is probably the best mind. Matt Hume is probably the best mind that the world has ever seen, best martial arts mind. I think if you go age for age, meaning year for year, the way we do pound for pound, Bruce Lee would have to be in that conversation and probably the winner. The year-for-year greatest mind, because in the 70s, he was theorizing things that are going to be proved in 10 years. So, but otherwise, Matt Hume is the best mind in the game. And I've mentioned this on the show before, and Demetrius mentioned it. I'm currently working on going to spend 7 to 10 days with Matt Hume and Demetrius Johnson when they get him ready for his next camp. And I hate that word camp, get ready for his next fight. And I don't hate it because Chael said to hate it. I hate it because it's limiting. This is not something we do for 8 weeks. This is a lifetime of perpetual growth is the goal. So there's no camps, in my opinion. There is only growth. But yeah, so I'm hoping to be invited into... Demetrius's 6 or 8 weeks at some point of the 6 or 8 weeks before his next fight, which I guess is Formiga. I guess that's just been announced. We'll find out. I'm going to reach out to Matt Hume as soon as I get back from vacation. and hopefully I'll stay in a cheap hotel and I'll wash the mats in return for learning. So, but Demetrius is the best fighter in the world. And he's on the front end, and the thing is, you don't... Whatever seems new is new, but it's not new to him and Matt. They already do it and have taken it into account. So an interesting little last question. I just want to again thank people for hanging out with me, and I want to thank everybody that worked with me at Fight Network and at UFC Sidekick, which was really cool to like have a real UFC gig like that. I've had a few different ones, but this one was a UFC broadcast, you know, as small as it was really great. And Eves and John Dodson, who's really the sweetest guy and the coolest guy, as well as those MMA awards people for nominating me with those legends. That was pretty cool. And so I am leaving tomorrow, going to San Diego. My wife is in kinky boots, and I'm going to visit her for a week. And when I get back, I'll probably start immediately on maybe Chris Weidman versus Musasi, I'm not sure, and get ready for TKO in April. There's talk of us commentating KSW. I got a great invitation from ACB in Russia to come out to Russia for their show, too. I'm not sure if I can come that weekend. I think it's TKO, but I really want to go there. So a lot of really fun things happening. Thanks for hanging in this whole trip with me, guys. Last question, Lucas. Why didn't Kimbo Slice become a better MMA fighter, considering he trained with great coaches at ATT? So I was talking about Dean Thomas all week, who's a genius. Mike Brown, who was the champion of the world. Mike Brown, you were the champion of the world, the greatest 145-pounder on planet Earth at the time. Beat Uriah Faber twice, undeniably. There was no UFC 145-pound belt. The WEC belt was the world champion, and Mike Brown was the world champion. Those guys and others all work at ATT. So the great Kimbo Slice, the late great Kimbo Slice, if anybody in this room, if I go out through the curtain and I pick somebody and I say, let's take you to ATT, why couldn't they become better? They're humans. They have their limitations. The room you're in, there's 1,000 people in that room in a week, or 400. Two of them are champions. I mean, it's up to the individual. You can work with all the best coaches you want, whether you're Kimbo Slice or anybody, me, you know, you. You can go in, I'm going to work with the best coach in the world. You still have to learn. You have to focus. You have to study. You have to outwork everybody. If you're in a room with 250 people and 100 of them outwork you, and there are 600 rooms like that in your country, that is 60,000 people who just outworked you. You have to be at the top of that. Everything is, it's math. You know, Kimbo Slice achieved what he was going to achieve. He had inherent skill, and he was exciting, and he was lovable, and he hit hard, and he worked with great people, and they made him the best they could. But didn't matter what room he was going to be in. He had his ceiling, and he reached it. And that guy did brilliant things, and he made a brilliant life for himself and his family. And he may not have even achieved that if he didn't have such great coaches at ATT. So it's all together. It all blends into each other, just as I'm hoping that this podcast did. Thank you for hanging out with me. I really enjoy this. I really, really do. And hopefully, I'm not sure if next Sunday I'm back. Like I said, I'm going to visit my wife. I haven't seen her in 42 days. So if I'm back next Sunday, we'll do another Ask Robin Black. And if I'm not, it'll be 2 weeks from today. Black out.